Hello, Winternet. This is ESE Insight Calling. I'm Ewan Spence.
I'm Matt Baker.
And I'm Donna Sluggett.
And just before Eurovision starts, what does the BBC give us? Happy Little Houses. Coming up on the show today, we look back at semi-final one, we tell you why the running order doesn't really matter, that's a surprise coming from me, and yeah, Bob Ross. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, welcome to ESE Insight's daily podcast, taking you backstage at the Eurovision Song Contest 2021, although to be fair, given it was the first semi-final last night broadcast around the world, we're going to be talking a lot about front of house as well. But yeah, just before we do that, last night's top three Twitter trends in the United Kingdom, the Eurovision Song Contest. Hashtag Eurovision. Sensible enough. Lady Gaga. Which, given it went banger, 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 banger on the sawtooth, again, fair enough. And Bob Ross. Presumably, and all of us in the UK thought, oh, that's because the run into the BBC broadcast was the joy of painting, which was lovely and mellow and chill before we all turned into emotional wrecks. Turns out that there was a big story on the Daily Beast. But the urban legend is now Bob Ross to Eurovision, and I suspect that us fans are going to be doing that forevermore. Half an hour to Eurovision, put on some Bob. What a shame we don't have anybody called Bob on the podcast. Instead, we got Matt and Donna. Matt Baker, of course, from Second Cherry Podcast. It's early in the morning. I had some nice introductions planned, but no. How was your coffee?
It's good. It's really good. And a bit of time just to go over in my head what happened, what went down last night. So feel well prepared. Well prepared.
Also from ESE Fan TV, I think, were you doing a sort of live stream right after with the results, Donna?
Yes, me personally, I wasn't on that show. I'll be on Thursday. But a lot of our panel went on air just afterwards and discussed what went down.
So we get to debut your fireworks and feelings then.
Oh, yes.
And there have been a lot of feelings. Look, I've been watching the rehearsals all week, as have we all. I was watching the jury show and the dress rehearsals for the first semi-final, and it's just like, that's perfectly fine. Yet the second the crowd cheered in that auditorium, I went, oh, it's Eurovision, I've missed this. And then the Roop came on, and you heard the audience, and yeah, I heard them last night. But that, and everybody on Twitter, and all of social media, and I was gone. I was just this little blubbering pile of emotional wreck, and it's just like, I've missed this. Where have you been for 2 years? And it was just really powerful having Eurovision back.
It really was. And it's because we're used to this being our baby. It's like the equivalent of a lot of people's football. It was just so nice to see audience undistanced, no masks, something normal back in that auditorium, and just the sound of the crowd together was just overwhelming at times. I definitely had my tissues.
Yeah, I think, and that kind of rubbed off on the performers, I think. We'll probably talk about that, but it just seemed like everything was lifted. Everyone was kind of there for a very specific reason. And it was, yeah, it was lovely to see.
It's that live experience that many in the arts have been saying, that's what we're missing, we need that back. And it's going to take a long time to come back. And yeah, I think a lot of people would have looked at that and went, those people are shoulder to shoulder. Why are there so many people in the theatre when we're like, it's 20% capacity? Why did it look so full? Well, it's worth pointing out that Eurovision was being used as a platform to test something. It was the Dutch government doing their field lab programme going, does this work? So everybody had to register beforehand 24 hours in advance with their names. Nobody over 70 was allowed. And if you had a ticket, they went, we're sorry, we're not allowing you in. We'll send you a whole bundle of flags and goodies and, I don't know, a dartboard with Martin Ostradal's face on it. So you can just have that good, proper experience. Everybody chooses the luggage anyway for some reason. And everybody had to have a test beforehand with some distance. They then had to take the rapid test before they went into the arena. Everybody had to keep masks on until they were sitting down. So once they were sitting down, of course, you're not breathing into somebody's face. And everybody who showed sure had all been tested. So basically everybody in that room had been tested half an hour before. And we Ben has spoken to somebody who's actually in the audience. We're going to post that up on Insight. It will be there, eacinsight.com, for you to read by the time we get this. And we're like, it was just this 2 hours of, it felt normal and freedom and everything that was missing. And then they stepped out of the Ahoy Theatre, and of course, everything else is back to social distance, stay at home. And it was just, you know, everything that they expected after we would normally have Eurovision just wasn't there. But we do have Eurovision. And I know I hark back to Besançon's ideas of bringing communities together after the war to test new technology and to learn about other cultures. Eurovision still testing new technology, except in this case, it's to deal with large-scale events, to deal with how do we deal with social distancing, how do we deal with the pandemic. He would never have thought this was what his contest was for all those years ago. But at the same time, he would probably think this is exactly what my contest is for. And that's why we love it. We're going to go on and talk about three-minute fluffy songs and all of that in a second. But, I mean, yeah, this is the mirror to society, and this is what everybody wants to see. And I cannot imagine what Saturday is going to be like.
Yeah, I think if the programming last year for the cancelled Eurovision kind of reminded us of how things have changed and what we've lost, this year it's kind of a reminder of actually things are going to get better, and this is what it's going to be like. So it's almost like it's this turnaround of emotion and trajectory where we're going. It was a positive sort of vibe, I think, last night.
Yeah, so I agree, Matt. It's certainly a little ray of hope, I think. And for many of us, I don't think there would have been a dry eye at home, really, just seeing that. The feels were so much, and it's certainly a positive sign, hopefully. So
we're going to head into that Eurovision freedom bubble right now as we go over the results of the semi-finals and look forward to Saturday. Right then, quick reminder on how it all goes. We had 16 perform last night, 10 have qualified through to Saturday. The other 6 remain on our playlist, remain in our hearts, but their Eurovision journey, at least on the television, comes to a stop just now. 50-50 vote, half from the telly votes last night, voted on by the viewing public, half from the juries. They were combined together. We will not know what those scores are until after the grand final. Otherwise, it might give some countries a bit of an incentive, or they think, oh, I'm going to win. And others are just like, oh, I just scraped through. Not much point in putting the effort in now, is there? So we will get all of that right after the close of the show on Saturday night. But, okay, we'll go through them in the order that they were called out as qualifying. This is not a ranking order. It's not like, because I'm about to say Norway first. That doesn't mean takes one. Nor does it mean that the last one read out, Ukraine, was the winner because we're going in reverse order, because that's only true for Jedward, at least in Jedward's mind when they first came out with the golden envelope. Thankfully, we don't do that anymore. So, Norway came out first. Donna, you have a slight love for the Norwegian song this year.
Just a little, Ewan, just a tiny bit. I don't actually have a costume sorted out for it at all, and I wasn't dressed in it last night at all.
Oh, the wings were the wrong shape.
But I had wings, come on.
Yeah,
that's
more
than some people actually had.
Yes, yeah. So this just, I know we've talked before about this, was just like 90s boy band cliche, but cliche is a cliche for a reason. And if you can hit every single one of them on the nose, it just feels right. I think that's the thing I took away from Fallen Angel. It's just like, yeah, I know how this goes, but it's like a comfy overcoat. It just fits me. I put it on and I'm just like, yeah, I know where I am with this one. I don't think it's any surprise that he got through.
Absolutely, with that jacket as well, or that big long coat. I mean, that's going to fit you so well, isn't it? You can just snuggle up inside and just go, yeah, I like being here.
Yeah, I'm quite glad to be proved wrong, actually. I'll be honest, I'm on record as saying that I didn't quite understand this performance, a little bit of tics. And I think that he's the sort of person that if you met him in real life and not through the lens of performance in Eurovision, you would feel his vibe, you would get it. And I thought, like, that's not going to translate at all. There's an incredible story here. We all know that it's, you know, it's a positive message about disability and also mental health. I didn't think that was coming through, but given the fact that he qualified for the final, clearly I'm in the minority. It translated, people get him, and I'm happy, absolutely happy to be proven wrong.
And the great thing is, of course, we live with these songs, Matt, for so long that we all take out different things and we all have different top tens. Mathematical point, it may be that you're still in the majority the way the points are given out. It's just that you've just, the aim of the game here is not to be, you know, if you can get 50% plus one, you've absolutely nailed it and you're walking it. You just got to score more points in six other countries and you're going to go through. Norway's drawn out for the second half, but keep that in mind. We'll be talking about that later. Israel up next. And look, it's really hard because you on one side you have Eden Alen, you have a song, and you have this piece of entertainment. On the other side, you've got the news, you've got current affairs, and if there's something that just felt really, really awkward and off last night, it was this.
Yeah, I swapped in my predictions. I swapped Israel out for Belgium last minute because I was thinking that exact reason, is it going to get the votes? But if you judge it on the song, the performance, the vocal, I think it should be in the final. I think that's right if you're judging the piece of art. I loved Eden from the minute we met her back in, 2020 at the Hakohala artist selection. And the song isn't quite as good as last year. I think generally a lot of people are have that sort of view, but I think we're getting the best presentation of this song possible. I don't think they can do better than this. They've done the most with it they can.
Yeah, I felt a bit of that last night. That was totally the best run that she'd done by far out of any of the rehearsals, and she looked like she was starting to enjoy it as well. She was really relaxing into it, and they've done a really lovely presentation, combining a right pace across that staging, and it should in theory work for the audience. It's a fun little bop, she performs it well, it's got a good pace to it, so what's not to like? And yes, there's always that element that we try and say that politics shouldn't come into Eurovision, but we do watch the news. There is elements of that will always sit at the back of your mind. So for me, she was probably borderline as well, mainly because I was thinking, well, maybe they're just going to not vote for her because of that.
And how the contest and the community deals with all of that is a wider topic to be addressed outside of the short podcast that's reviewing the semi-final, but it is there. Also enjoying herself immensely is Russia. And again, the live audience, the adrenaline of knowing that you're going out, I think lifted Manisha's performance to another level. This just felt like it was everything it wanted to be. No holds barred social, political power coming through.
Absolutely. She was loving her moment on that stage, every inch of it. And we felt it. It came across in the best way possible. And I'm happy to be proven wrong about this as well. It was not my favourite at all. I found the melodies quite jarring and things like that. But the statement she brings is there and you cannot avoid it. And it's a good one. What's not to love, really, you know?
And it's a statement that did cut through to the general public.
Yeah, absolutely. This has got crossover appeal for the votes, I think, both individual jurors who voted for this, and also, yeah, people loving the message. I think Manisha's my find of the year. You know, this is why I love Eurovision, is that you get introduction to new music and new people and cultures. And just, I love that. I think Manisha, she understands absolutely everything that's going on stage. She's part of it. She's in the moment. And just the facial gestures that she's given us, she understands exactly what she's doing on stage. I love it.
Okay, both Russia and Israel have drawn themselves up into the first half of the grand final. Azerbaijan has drawn themselves into the second half by dint of Effendi's qualification as well with Mata Hari.
Yes, I'm happy this is there. I thought it would qualify. For all the potential of the kitchen sink, the bath, the built-in wet room, everything can get thrown at this performance, the team decided to strip it back. And whilst one side of me is very disappointed with that, I wanted that kitchen sink, the more serious side is, no, that's what the song needed. Some of the backdrop, I really like the decorative sort of architectural looks, I really love. And apart from the cheap looking snake, which I think is a rollover from Cleopatra last year staging, generally this is all just a great, good performance. It's going to get a fair telly vote. Some jurors will lap it up, and that's why it's there. It's why it qualified.
Yes, Azerbaijan is, again, not one of my favourites, but when they brought it to the stage, it's taken on a whole new level. And props to the tech and design teams, because they've done an amazing job bringing this to life. What seemed very 2D, repetitive, I suppose melodically quite fun song, somehow has given a 3D leg. And it really, it's given a colour, a life, and a vibrancy that I never thought I would be seeing on that stage. And even the dance moves work quite well. So in that way, it's made it, by stripping it back, it's made it more accessible for people to grasp.
Malta up next with an incredibly confident performance from Destiny. But there again, having seen Destiny all the way back to Junior Eurovision, that does not surprise me at all.
Yep, I felt like I was watching the winner of Eurovision. That's just me and my sensibilities for an entry like that, I think. I think not everybody has this down to be the winner. It's dipped in the betting since last night, I think. But I'm just blown away by her vocal every time. It still amazes me how good she is. She turned it on for the show a little bit, for the crowd. I think she really felt that and was vibing a little bit. And I think she's had an interesting ride so far. I think she's seen the comments about her appearance, and she finds herself answering questions that perhaps other artists are not being asked, but she's literally telling you in her song how much she doesn't care what you think. And I'm really, I just think, for me, top notch, adore her, great.
Yeah, she's got to be one of the strongest vocals, female vocals in the competition that we know so far. And for such a young age, it's incredible. I'm so glad that she's there, to be honest. Her progression has come on so much, and this is a really empowering song yet again, and she gives it every gusto that she can. In all the rehearsals, she's crept up a little, but she was out there from the beginning. And I love it. Such an engaging performance as well. Very vibrant, very bright. It does say winner, doesn't it?
With broad appeal. That's when you think about who's going to vote for this, you think, well, the jurors can vote for it, the televote are going to vote for it. It's got the broadest appeal, and maybe in a year where everything's going to be so close, is that how you win Eurovision this year?
It's a tough one, because there's probably seven or eight. There's this little chasing pack that's kind of, there's the pack, and then there's this group of seven that's kind of done its own little breakaway. Nobody's they're all kind of still jostling around each other going, I'm not going to go ahead, I'm not going to go ahead. Kind of left, it's this group is seven. Any one of us can win. Oh, we shall see. Right then, Malta, first half for the grand final. Lithuania drawn the second half with the Roop qualifying through with Discotheque. So that means they're not going to be opening the show again. But it was the perfect opener to welcome us back to the song contest.
Oh my God, wasn't it? Oh gosh, with those pinks and yellows and that kind of, well, yellow the race kind of vibe about it as well. I love it, absolutely love it. They have so much energy and attack. They're always on point. And I was so happy when this was drawn first, because the lead singer's always so confident, or he at least gives you the impression of that confidence. He's very secure in how he moves and how he sings. And I couldn't have wanted for a better opener, to be honest. I'm hoping that they will be after a break, perhaps, to give that little palate cleanser for when they are in the second half. But yeah, it's such a good performance.
Yeah, and I think that confidence actually is what comes through a lot. It's a clinical execution of the song, but not like in a sterile way. It's LaRoupe. They're, you know, they're giving it exactly what they need to give it. They know how to do this. They've been preparing for this for a long, long time. And you get that vibe from the delegation as well, speaking to them from the get-go. They've been polished, confident, prepared. They're completely relaxed. They know they're going to do well. They're quietly confident they're going to, you know, qualify last night. And I just think it's all just all positive vibes. They're all just very, very happy. And you can see the Warner Music money coming through there, I think, as well, on the stage and the outfits. But
they can use Eurovision as an international stage, just as we've discovered Manisha. You're saying there, Matt, a lot of people are going to discover the Roupe and also going to realise that clinical does not mean emotionless when you come up to your performance. Cyprus up next, and I suspect that was behind the drive between Lady Gaga trending last night. Although, Matt, bowing to your more extensive knowledge of this type of music, I understand that it's not Poker Face it's referring. There's another song type that is more appropriate to El Diablo.
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of sort of a Miley Cyrus song, but it's actually Rita Ora and Anywhere. Is that the song?
But it's, you know, I could nod my head at you and look clever at this point, but I have no idea. That's where we bring experts on.
It shares, yes, it is. It's the Rita Ora song. It shares the melody quite closely. I'm not, you know, I don't shout plagiarism every 5 minutes like some people, but it's very close, and it just reminds people. I think it works in its favour. I think people might not recall the song, but they know they've heard a song like this, and therefore think, oh, this is contemporary. Oh, this is very now.
It's the equivalent of the comfy jacket going on. You know, this style of music doesn't have a huge amount of variation because it knows what it wants to be. It just does it. And yet there are proponents who debut that style. But you listen to the charts across Europe, you'll hear a lot of this stuff. So I think Cyprus had a lot of things going for it. One is comfy overcoat of a number that's a bit like La Gaga, a really high energy stage performance, and just everything again feeling comfy and freedom, and this is what we've missed.
Yes, absolutely. And she sold it so well, didn't she? All those months of preparation and warm-ups, and just that sheer personality was brought across on the stage as well. She's such a lovely woman to interview, and she gave it everything. There was nothing hidden there at all. That vocal from the jury show, even up to last night, improved immensely. And they've kind of thrown the kitchen sink at it without putting the kitchen sink there as well. That mirror wall just adds so much to it.
And it's such a simple effect as well.
It is, you know, it's almost like
it's almost like a mirror
lava lamp. Well, yes, but a mirror, but in a bigger way, in a sense.
Congratulations, Cypher. Sometimes that subtle bit of staging just magnifies and gives you that little edge just a little bit more. Sweden up next, being drawn out of the qualifiers, going into the second half of the grand final. These were all drawn at the press conference afterwards. Tusse's voices, it felt a little bit clunky coming after Russia. I mean, we've seen this running order for ages, but it was just like, I think the biggest whiplash of the night was probably going from, you know, Russia's Russian Woman into a song with the lyric A Million Voices.
Yeah, it's a completely different vibe. But I still feel like it's hard to judge Sweden. I think it's always hard to judge this because you're so used to it from Melody Festivalen. I don't think this performance has quite the effect or impact as the Melfest performance. But I do think that Tusse's vocal has been a little bit like on the verge of breaking in rehearsals, but that performance last night, he did nail it brilliantly. And I think, you know, the story's still there. Everybody gets it. I think the commentators will be pointing it out. I know we couldn't vote on the BBC last night, but we got that sort of story told to us. So hopefully that's what other commentators are going to be doing. So and I think they need that because they need votes from both sides of the televote and the jury in order to excel, really.
Yeah, given Sweden's past performance, they need to push a little bit more towards it. Their televote has been weaker over the last years. And we're at the point where it's like, no, past performance has nothing to do with current performance, but at the same time, as long-time Eurovision watchers, we can see the trends of which countries tend to go in which places. So let's see if that pattern breaks this year or not. Belgium coming up next. They've done for the first half, by the way. Hooverphonic in the wrong place. It's an easy meme to make. And you know what? I didn't call the Common Linnets when I was doing Jukebox Dream, and maybe I should have. And I didn't call Hooverphonic when maybe I should have as well. It's still not my cup of tea, but I can just see how this one came through. Again, it's live music. Again, it's a professional band who know exactly what they need to deliver.
Exactly. They've got 25 years or so experience and are well known through Europe. So there will always be a certain selection of votes that will come their way. And I think that's clearly showed. The most interesting way that this is staged is because they're surrounding her. And she's lovely lit in the centre. But it's not not too claustrophobic, I think. It just gives enough to draw her in with the camera and you engage with her face, and that's what sells it, I think, that staticness.
Yeah, it's not too try hard. I think it stands out for that reason. With everything that's going on around it, they're just, nope, you're at our gig, we're just doing what we would normally do. It is staged really classy, I think, and I think for that reason, because there is no bells and whistles, it actually stands out, and it's why it got through. A jury vote would have pushed this through, I would imagine.
We'll find out all of that on Saturday night after the grand final, when we get the scores done and we all just pour over everything going, oh, did you see? Oh, X missed out on the grand final by 1 point from the jury. Ooh, and all of that as well. And finally, in the 10 qualifiers that were read out in a random order and in no way designed to build up any tension at all, go Ukraine and Shum. I'm so glad this made it through. And again, live audience, but when the full turbo folk kicks in at the very end and we get Running Man in the background like the start of the old Grey Whistle test, that audience just absolutely loved it.
Oh, God, I was sitting on the edge of my sofa going, oh, no, this is going to be another Conchita moment again, isn't it? And we got it finally, because I wasn't sure. This, although it's my favourite so far, I was hoping more than new that this would get through. And certainly it's not to everybody's taste. It's, her voice is not always as accessible, is it, for a broad appeal. And some consider this a little bit more high art than accessible. But, oh, my gosh, I'm so pleased it went through.
High art works, looks at 1944. Less accessible, looks at 3/4 swing jazz from Portugal. You know, you know, I'm not, by the way, I'm not talking Ukraine into winning this, but like with many of the songs, if, in this case, Shum were to win Eurovision, we could look back and say, oh, of course, the signs were all there all the time. And
absolutely.
It's just such a wonderfully strong year. Everybody's got really strong points for being there and showcasing and being wonderful. And yep, Ukraine have taken different boxes, but they're still valid boxes. And at the end of the day, a vote's a vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's in tranced us. I think that's what it is. It's if you weren't necessarily into this style of music and not something you listen to, you could still vote for this at, you know, just because you're entranced and you think, oh, actually this is a little bit Eurovision, or you know, this is something different and new. That I think the people that will vote for this will vote for this.
It reminds me of Lordi in the sense that everybody who was into that performance theatrical metal could look at Lordi and go, that's Lordi. But at the same time, Hard Rock Hallelujah, structure-wise, was Schlager. It was, this is kind of Eurovision. What happens when you get to the 2 minutes? Well, we need to do a key change. We need to do something on the stage with the prop. Bing! Wings! And, you know, it made it accessible while not destroying the essence of the band.
But also, I do feel like they've staged this perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. Katerina does not break from her intensity and severity, but they balance that out with the dancing lads with their halo rings that echo the dawning sun backdrop with her, and at the end when they sort of give that halo to her head. And it's just that lighter note just makes the performance slightly less earnest and a little bit more just what's needed to be accessible.
And there we go. That's our 10 qualifiers out of semi-final one. Not making it through, just for the record, Australia, Slovenia, Croatia, North Macedonia, Ireland, and Romania. But we still have those songs. We still have all the videos. Those artists' careers will continue to go on. And I'm sure that they'll have gathered tens of thousands more new fans with their Eurovision experience. Certainly all us in the community are going to be keeping an eye on them over the future as well. But now we have our eye, very briefly, let's turn to Saturday night, well, Friday night for the jury final and Saturday night for the TV show, but the grand final is Saturday night. And this thing about top half and bottom half of the running order, what are we going on about? Look, I'm just going to be very brief on this one, but 26 songs perform in the grand final. One of them, we know the running slot there. The Dutch don't get to choose their own spot in the running order. It's drawn out at random. They've drawn 23rd, which, let's face it, is a really good spot for the home crowd. And such an emotional song, as the emotions build up, it's going to really punch in. I mean, Matt, did you hear them singing along to just the one-minute clip in the semi-final last night? The Hoy Theatre is going to explode on Saturday.
It is. I think from the Netherlands' perspective, from their entry, it is. It's going to be. It's got a joyful quality. So therefore, I think it's in tune with how people are going to be feeling about their entry and about being back at Eurovision. So, yeah, it's that second half is gonna explode for sure.
But the Dutch producers get to program everybody else in the running order, but rather having the entire show to work with, they're given a block of songs that will be in the first half and a block of songs that will be in the second half. Now, Donna.
Yes, Ewan.
The received wisdom in fandom is you want the second half, but in terms of winning, it's not really that important, is it?
Not really, no. I mean, if you look back at some of the statistics of the more recent years, there seem to be at least four winners that are from the middle of the pack, sort of around the first half, around the 11th, 12th position.
Yeah.
So I think Duncan Lawrence was 12th.
Duncan sung in 12th.
Yeah.
Portugal back in 2017 sung in 11th from the top half. Sweden 2 years before that. 10th place, top half. Austria, year before that, top half. Obviously, the other years, bottom half. But the running order is... Look, I know why the split is there. It's because to give you a little bit more attention, and it was a sort of halfway house from drawing out your exact spot from a hat, which just led to some clunky transitions and changes. And this is still a TV show, even though it's a contest. And they did this top half, bottom half. Well, look, part of me thinks, get rid of this altogether, just leave it as a production-led run. But what it does is it actually gives us two peaks. It gives us a peak at the end of the first half and a peak at the end of the second half, as if we have a first half and a second half. Literally.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the producer-led running order, and I know that's hard for some people to get their head around when it's a competition. So you start thinking about how to make things fair for all, but I feel like it's impossible to make it fair. There's ups and downs for different, you know, approaches to this. But at the end of the day, as you said, we're making a TV program. It's going across, you know, multiple territories and different countries. So I think you do need to have that at the front and center. I think in terms of being where you want to be, I think first being in the first 10, I think is the only thing you want to avoid. I think that's probably what the stats are telling us, that you can be first half, just don't be too early, especially now that the contest is 26 plus songs or whatever now.
And of course, the way to get near the end of the first half or near the end of the second half into those slots that feel better. See, here's the thing. No, the producers don't know the scores, but they can read the bookies odds. They can listen to all the community. They can see what the chatter is. And if you are programming a variety show, Donnie, you'll know this from doing your theatre and your gang shows and mm-hmm. everything. You don't open with the big guns. You open up with one of them, just like you have to tune in first of all to find out if it's going to be Flo Rida or No Rida. But you kind of start putting your bigger names to the back of the show. You want people to keep on watching. And that's why you have this sort of, oh, they're obviously getting at the end, they know that they want to win. No, it's just for the TV audience, it's just like, this one's coming, just wait. This is a good one in the meantime, this one's coming. And it builds up, and you get this, oh, this is great block in the middle of, yay! But that's because it's the most tension from the first one, and then it's the most tension from the second one. So, you know, for top half, bottom half, in the sense of making a show, creates two big waves. But also, we're still following the same rules as variety theatre that Val Parnell and Lott put together in the 50s for Sunday Night at the London Palladium.
I suppose we are, really, aren't we? Some of it will be a little bit not flowing with that idea, because you have to work out what sets people have. So Ukraine's truck set that they have may cause a little bit of a jarring moment to get that on and off. Maybe that will be after a break, perhaps. We'll also, if Bulgaria get through, then we've got her rock to work out how that's going to get on and off. But otherwise, yes, yeah. This crescendo build for up to Act One, then we go to the interval, then we come back down again to the finale. It's a tried and tested formula that works.
Am I allowed to say it's like a comfy overcoat if you do production?
Oh, go on then.
It's like a comfy overcoat if you do production. Right then, yes. That said, we will still pick over the running order with an intense fine-toothed comb to find out who's winning, who's not. Of course, I'm just more interested to see how they managed to separate all these songs with the pink and blue colour scheme. So there we are, just a quick look at the running order, something I'm sure we will touch on again and go into a huge amount of detail later on in our run of podcasts, probably on Saturday morning once we've actually got the final running order for the final. Final running order for the final. Yep, that just about works. So thank you all out there for listening. Very much appreciated. As always, we've got more content back at ESCinsight.com with articles, spotters guides, a downloadable ebook, and more podcasts. Thank you also to my guest, first of all, from Second Chair, we have Matt Baker.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And also to AC Fan TV's Donna Sluggett.
Thanks for having me again, Ewan. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
And that's YouTube on ESC Fan TV. That's content going on throughout Eurovision Week and beyond. And Matt, secondcherry.vision will be popping up once Eurovision finishes.
Yeah, we'll have a review show, seeing what happened and, yeah, thrashing it out. Debrief.
And then we'll go on from there into the summer, listening to the songs that never quite made it to the song contest and giving them their second chance. The clue is in the name. There we go. Thank you all again once more. I've been Ewan Spence. It's your ESC Insight daily look at the world of the Eurovision Song Contest. Right then, it's near the end. Who wants to call for them? They're both pointing at each other. Great, that means it's me. I still need to say guitars, though. That means it's me. Guitars. Today's ESC Insight Daily Podcast was hosted by Ewan Spence with Matt Baker and Donna Sluggett. Find out more at www.escinsight.com.